Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Wandering Road podcast. I'm your host Chris, alongside my co-host Dean, and for today's show, we're going to be talking about the legends of the weeping women across multiple cultures. So we're talking about La Llorona, Cuche Sacaona, Banshees, you name it. We're going to do a deep dive into the concept of the weeping woman and why is this so common. But before we get started with today's show, Dean, I was taking a look at our stats and I noticed from our past few episodes, we've been getting a lot of downloads from across the world, specifically from Sweden, the UK, Ireland. I saw some parts in Africa. We had some downloads in Australia. And I just wanted to say, we really, really appreciate you listening. If you enjoyed the show, please, please spread the word to your friends and family, share it. And again, we really appreciate everyone that listens to the show, seeing people from all over the world tuning in to listen to our episodes gives us such a massive morale boost. It helps drive us to create more content for you and want to create more content for you. So we're really appreciative of that. And if you have your own creepy paranormal stories, encounters, ghost stories, cryptid encounters, alien encounters, abduction stories, and you want to share that with us so we could dedicate an episode and read them out on the show and talk about them, feel free to send an email to twroadpodcast@gmail.com. Again, that's twroadpodcast@gmail.com. Submit your stories, and we'd be more than happy to feature them on future episodes and have episodes dedicated to them. And with that, we'll go ahead and get started with today's show. How are you doing today, buddy?
I'm all right, man. Looking forward to this one. This is an interesting concept, one that's spread across the globe in a lot of stories across different cultures. And interestingly enough, there's a lot of shared concepts about not just the fact that the woman is crying, but also that she's tied directly to some great, terrible thing happening to her. Or some travesty, or even just being near water. Which direction would you like to go today for the weeping woman? Do you want to start on any particular one that's most interesting?
We could start by giving a quick background of what the weeping woman is, like a general background. So like you said, it often begins with a tragic event, sometimes with a mother suffering a great loss, or you know, the most common thing that we see is that it's typically deals with the death of children or some sort of conflict with like a husband or a lover that in turn leads to some sort of tragic end for both parties or just the children and the woman. And what's interesting is that, like you said, people have encountered the weeping woman usually near bodies of water such as rivers, lakes, oceans. According to legend, encountering the weeping woman is seen as an omen of doom or misfortune. Some cultures say that if you hear or see a weeping woman, it essentially foretells death, tragedy, especially for children. And also, people have said that if you try to console or help them, one, you could either get killed because they're a vengeful spirit. Other times, it's just futile. They're like completely ignore you.
I wonder how many stories, if there's got to be stories where a real live woman was in distress or like crying and then people avoided her. And it's actually kind of like a double-edged sword. You know, it's like, I would say that, I don't know, man, like, you know, like you said, sometimes some situations people claim that it leads to death. So it's kind of a gamble, I guess, if you go help some woman who's crying. But at the same time, if you are a shitty person and you don't try to help that person and you just move on for your own sense of safety, then you kind of, maybe you might get smited by some spirit anyway. So it's kind of like a lose-lose situation, maybe.
Yeah, that would fucking suck, dude. Like you stop to on the side of the road, like you're driving, you see like a woman crying and you pull over. And you try to help her out and you freaking run into like a demon spirit.
Yeah, it's worse.
that's completely that's trying to kill you, or even worse, you like run into like an ambush setup that they use this like lady as a prop to rob people. You know, what really sucks, I promise we'll get into the paranormal, is that that's a thing. So I feel like people take advantage of these stories, specifically with something like that. Like, it doesn't take much to take someone, put them in like a white gown dress, and have them pretend to cry on the side of the road, you know, to attract attention, to attract people to do bad things to them.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can understand why people are like, you know what, fuck that. I don't care. It might be a demon, it might be a ghost, or it might be someone in really in distress, but I'm speeding down the road and I'm not dealing with that.
You know, one of
shit.
The best movies I've ever seen, best horror movies I think I've ever seen in my life, was a Korean movie. It might still be on Netflix. It's kind of older now. I don't know when it came out. I think it came out before the pandemic, or maybe like during or right after. But it's called The Wailing. Have you ever seen The Wailing?
Yeah. I haven't.
So,
what is that about?
If you like horror movies, man, you got to check out The Wailing. I'm going to look it up real quick because I want to make sure I'm telling people the right name. Yeah, it's called, okay, it's pretty old. Wow. So 2016, it's a horror thriller called The Wailing, W-A-I-L-I-N-G. I think that you could probably watch it. I don't know, not everybody's crazy about subtitles, but I think that you can also watch it subbed where you hear like another language over top of it. But anyway, I watched the dub version. You know, when I say horror movies, like ratings, I always say if a horror movie is above a 6 out of 10 on IMDb or like above, I don't know, like a 70% on Rotten Tomatoes, I'll give it a chance. Because I've seen movies, like horror movies, that are just absolute shit shows, just terrible, that were rated better. But I also have seen horror movies that were rated like at a 6 out of 10. And they were actually, I like them a lot. So this one is actually 7.4 out of 10 and 99% on Rotten Tomatoes. So it's, I thought it was a really well done creepy movie. So the synopsis is there's villagers going to investigate a mysterious new stranger. There's killings that are going on when he arrives. So it's, you know, obviously people are thinking that it's the person who just came who's responsible. And then there's kind of this mass hysteria that's going on about people being taken and killed as time goes on. And there's actually, I don't want to ruin anything, but there's actually kind of a Judeo-Christian aspect to it as well, because there's a really big Christian population in Korea, in South Korea. It is based off of Christianity in a way, but I won't go beyond that because it also ties in like local spirits and beliefs and stuff like that. And I think there is one thing I can say that won't give too much away. The actual structure of the movie is super interesting. And this kind of ties back into what we were saying about with, you know, like people not going to help a crying woman because they're afraid, but in the end, like they could have actually helped someone or helped the spirit in a positive way. And like humans have this crazy capacity. They have two decisions in front of them. And even I'm guilty of this. I experience this every single day of my life. And I know everybody else does too. We just have this crazy capacity to choose the wrong one, to the point where it's like, you know, it's no longer 50-50. It's like, even though it's two choices, it's still like somehow weighted more in the wrong direction. So the movie is kind of like, I don't want to ruin too much, but the movie is kind of like in that vein, the concept of like choosing to do a certain thing throughout the movie leads to worse scenarios for the person. It's all like within the context of like spiritual or like a horror and spirits and whatnot. So I recommend it.
Yeah, I'll definitely have to check that out. As you know, I love horror movies, so that's kind of right up my alley. I've seen it on Netflix, but I never actually watched it. I do this shit where I just put things on my list and I never get to them. But I think we'll jump right in with, well, over here in the Americas is probably the most common weeping woman story. Even though you admitted to me you've never heard of her before.
Yeah.
It's La Llorona. So essentially, La Llorona is very popular within Latin America, Hispanic culture. My mother definitely scared me with La Llorona stories when I was younger. So essentially, the story goes, which I believe I recounted in one of our previous episodes when we talked about night hags and we got into weeping women for some reason. And I actually dedicated an entire episode to La Llorona, which is episode 3. So essentially, La Llorona's story is that there's multiple variations, but the common one is that when she was young, she was very beautiful. She married a wealthy landowner, and this takes place in Mexico. And she ends up bearing children for this man, two little boys. as the children got older, she got older, and the man didn't like she wasn't as young and pretty anymore. So what does he do? He goes and he finds another pretty young woman in the village to be with. One day she was walking down the road, saw them together in a horse-drawn carriage, and he basically said, "You need to piss off. I don't want to be with you anymore." So in her grief, she takes her two kids and she drowns them in the river. In her grief, it's in all her hysteria, she kills her kids. And then after it's done, she realizes what happens. So she like walks up and down the riverbanks searching for her kids. Eventually, she dies of starvation. And when she dies, she goes up to the gates of heaven and she's questioned about her kids. And as her punishment, she is sent back as a shade to roam the earth forever, weeping and crying for her children. So that is the common background that she has with regards to her folklore and her legend. There are other stories that say that, you know, she had two kids and her husband left her and she was a huge drinker and she went to a bar and she spent the entire night at the bar. And when she came back home, she found her kids drowned. That's one of the variations. So it's usually her husband left her and she drowned her kids, or she was out partying all night and there was an accident with water and her kids died.
I can't help but say, I mean, I was going to save this for later because this is more of like the analytical side. But when you, I just bring it up because you're bringing into this story a different variation that jumps out to me as kind of like a moral lesson. I still want to have a conversation about the idea that these entities are real and people have actually encountered them. But I do think that there's an interesting twist, like from a social perspective, that people add on to these stories, like, you know, one is kind of hard, you know, one is a lesson maybe for a man or someone who, you know, has someone that they love or whatever, drawing in someone and winning their heart and then suddenly dashing it to pieces because they don't think that they are attracted to them anymore. There's no dedication anymore to that person. So they cut ties and then the grief. But then the interesting part of that story, it's really the person who cuts ties with the woman first. And then that leads her to her folly, in which she pays for that. And you don't really hear about the other person paying for that. I'm sure there are stories about the woman. I think there's even movies where like the weeping woman goes back and takes revenge on the person who wronged her. So I'm sure that's out there. So it's kind of like a dual-sided lesson for, you know, the person who inflicted the pain on the woman and then also the woman who inflicted pain on the children. But when you brought up the party one and the drinking one, it would be interesting to find out like which countries or which cultures have the story that is more weighted towards the drinking and the partying, because that might just be a reflection of like what people believe is more right or wrong about what a woman can or can't do and go out and do and how it might affect her family life or whatever. So that's just a little minor note. I think we can switch gears back to this creepy possible side that these entities are real, because I could totally see it being factual. Because when we say that spirits are roaming the earth and the ones that are like more malevolent and angrier, it does make sense that they're tied to tragedy. And this sounds like an extremely tragic event to be slighted by someone you love and to end up, you know, killing your own offspring. You said that your parents or your mom brought up stories, or your grandmother brought up stories about this to you. What did she tell you she had any interactions or saw anything like a wailing woman or knew anybody who experienced that?
To answer that question, no, my mom hasn't had any interactions. And it was my mom that told me these stories. So it's kind of interesting with Hispanic or Latin culture, right? They use these folk stories and sometimes these like demonic or ghost stories as ways to scare their children straight. So that's one of the reasons why I was scared with this, because I was a little kid. I was being a little shit. I didn't want to go to sleep. So La Llorona, according to multiple stories and multiple encounters that people have had in Mexico and Central and South America, essentially she comes out at night and she looks for quote unquote her children. But she doesn't understand that every child she encounters is not her child. Mm. So that's what most of the stories are, in which one, they were used to scare children. And two, the encounters that people say that they had with La Llorona, most of the time she's mainly coming for the kids. And what's creepy is that I like to go into Reddit and look at people's horror posts and stuff like that. I delved into La Llorona Reddit because a few years ago, the Conjuring series released the movie The Curse of La Llorona, which is absolutely horrible, by the way. So don't watch it. It's so shitty that it made me want to explore La Llorona story. So you go into this deep rabbit hole where I'm looking at TikTok videos, I'm reading Reddit stories. And one of the creepy Reddit stories that I came across, so I can't attest to whether this is true or not. Any of our listeners, if you encountered La Llorona or have any stories, feel free to email us. But the story goes is that this girl said that when her mom was born, she stayed in, this happened in Mexico. I think it was like Mexico City or somewhere out in the countryside near Mexico City, that when her mom was born, she had her own room and her crib was next to the window. And apparently one night, her mom started like screaming and going ballistic because apparently this girl's mom, according to her grandmother, wasn't really a baby that cried a lot at night. She was one of those rare babies that slept through the night. And you being a parent probably knows what I'm talking about, whether your daughter slept through the night or not. So according to the story, this lady, she's a baby. She normally sleeps through the night. Then one night, her mother hears the baby screaming at the top of its lungs, just screaming and crying. So the mother, who is the grandmother, goes into the room and sees this figure in this white gown with black hair reaching into the window to try and grab the baby. And what was interesting is that they said in the story that this figure, you could see water dripping off of her hands and whatnot. You could see visibly that her hair was wet.
Yeah.
So that was one of the encounters that I found that I read about, which was super creepy. And another one that I read about, this guy, he was at a family gathering and their kids, and they were told not to go play in the river unsupervised with an adult. But like one of his cousin was being a little shit and was like, stop being a pussy. Let's go into the river. So they go into the river and they start playing. And then something like grabs his foot and pulls him down. When he turns around to, you know, try to get his foot loose and he's looking at it, it's some lady in some white gown with deathly black eyes. And then he blacks out.
Shit.
And the next thing, he wakes up in the hospital. And people are asking, you know, what happened? What happened? And no one believed them. And then his grandmother comes in and was like, tell me what really happened. She made everyone leave the room and was like, tell me what really happened. And he's like, this is what I saw. This is what I did. And the grandmother kind of reprimanded him and said, I told you not, your kid, I told you not to go play near the water because La Llorona is a real thing and it's going to come get you. So it's one of those things where there are multiple, people have multiple encounters. Like if you go to TikTok and you type in La Llorona, there will be people on filming in the middle of the night from like their houses and stuff. You could see a pitch black field and you'll hear someone wailing and crying like in the middle of the fucking countryside. One, that's either La Llorona, or two, someone being a fucking asshole trying to scare people. An interesting one before I let you respond is I saw a TikTok video of this guy on a moped, and behind him the entire time you could hear crying and weeping and someone saying like in an eerie voice, like, "Ay mis hijos," this dude is going hell for leather trying to get away, but it just sounds like it's getting gaining on him. It's so creepy. But it's like, it makes you think as well, like, okay, was someone, you know, pulling a prank type of thing? But I digress. I'll let you take the floor.
So the first thing that I thought of when you were talking was, so here's the thing. I'm going to eat these words at some point in my life, probably. But even though I do get freaked out sometimes about, you know, paranormal stuff that might be happening, and I do, you know, like if I turn the lights out downstairs by myself, like I'm not particularly scared, but I'll have it, the thought in the back of my head. You know what I mean? Like I watch enough horror movies and we talk about this stuff enough to where like it is pretty at the top of my thoughts and stuff whenever I'm in a situation of being in the dark by myself or whatever. I can't help but think about it. But I will say that even though I won't count myself as being terribly afraid, and in that moment, if I were to experience something, I would probably for a moment be like really like standing, like my hair on the back of my neck would stand up and I'd get really like, oh shit. But I kind of like to think that I would kind of toughen up and try to being you know, the parent in the situation, like trying to protect my family. I'm going to try to, you know, I would probably scream, are you fucking kidding me? You know what I mean? I would do something like that. Like which probably isn't smart to do with a spirit.
Right.
But okay. So I kind of went off a little mini tangent, but what I'm getting at is I had a couple interesting things happen since my daughter was born, and I'll share them really quickly. They're not too interesting, I don't think, but maybe there's something there. So I will say too that neither side, my wife or me, myself, like we don't have any grandparents left. They've passed on already. I like to think that maybe like they're good spirits or maybe the spirits of our loved ones who are gone. But my daughter, when she was about a year and a half old, I was changing her on our bed, getting ready for bed. And she was just staring over my shoulder at the ceiling. And I noticed that she had never really done that before. Like she had like, you know, staring episodes every once in a while. By the way, if you have a young child and they're like staring off into the distance and they're not blinking and stuff, that might be a red flag. I was really worried for a second there that she had something wrong, but she's fine. But she was staring off over my shoulder and just staring at the ceiling, and she was infatuated with something. And I'm looking at her, looking at this thing over my shoulder on the ceiling, and I'm watching her for like 10 seconds. And she's not looking back at me like she usually does. So I'm like, that's weird. So I look up. There's nothing there that I see on the ceiling. There's no pattern. It's just a white wall. There's nothing that she could possibly be infatuated with that I could see. So she's just staring at it. And I look down, she looks out the door after that, after she breaks contact or she breaks the sight of the ceiling, she looks out the door from our bedroom, and I'm by myself. I think my wife isn't even home yet. She looks out the door into the dark and she's like, she says something like, mama, or like, you know what I mean? Like she's calling out the door to somebody who's not there. And it could have just been that she was looking for her mom, but I just thought that was a little mini freak out. But an even better story that popped into my head after you're talking about that crib one with the arms reaching in and whatever. This is particularly creepy. So we have a baby monitor and we leave it on next to our bed while we're sleeping, just in case, like, you know, she cries bloody murder, needs something in the middle of the night. So we put her down. Most nights she goes to bed pretty quickly, but sometimes she lays there for a while. But this happened like a while ago. Like she was only like maybe, I think she was like 1 3/4, like she was maybe 1 8, 9 months or something like that. She was laying there and she was kind of like fussing. She wasn't crying, but she was fussing. And then all of a sudden I hear over the monitor, shh, like the quietest shush. I could have sworn I heard the quietest shushing. And the creepiest thing was my wife was with me in the room and I was obviously in the room and there was nobody in the room with her. A couple seconds later, calmed down after that. I think that it's possible that there was someone trying to console her that wasn't a physical being, but I kind of like to think that was more a positive story than a scary story. Yeah, I'm going to take a pause there because that was a really intricate story and I ate up a lot of time, but I guess we'll switch back over to the weeping and the wailing woman side, which is more like a more scary version. I myself have not encountered anything like that. But when I was in Indonesia, this is one of my favorite ghost stories from Indonesia. I'm trying to try not to butcher the name because it's in Bahasa Indonesian. It's Kuntilanak or the Pontianak. And I think they just came out with a movie called Pontianak, and I haven't watched it yet. But what essentially it is, it's in the same vein of the stories we've been telling. It's about a female ghost or spirit who suffered a really crazy tragedy. But it's not that she killed her children or that she was slighted by somebody. She actually died during childbirth. And I'm sure that that's an enduring theme too, probably more so than the story of like a woman killing her kids. But this is particularly creepy because when the ghost was described to me by my friends who are Indonesian, she walks around in a white gown and she has black wet hair, really matted hair that is draped over her face. You don't really ever see a full picture of her face, and she's kind of like slumped over and she kind of like shuffles around slowly. But in her gown, in the center of her gown where her stomach is, there's a black hole. It's just a black oval. and obviously signifying that she is missing her child that died during childbirth, and she also died. So not only did the child die during childbirth, she also died whenever the child passed on. So the terrifying thing about that that stuck in my head when I was traveling in Indonesia is she targets men. I think there's like kind of, I don't know what the story is about targeting men, but I figure that I'm a white guy in Indonesia and I must stand out like a sore thumb. So I would probably be like a really prime target for some spirits or something. So that always stuck with me as a terrifying concept. And the most terrifying concept of all is that she makes a sound. I know if you're listening to this, you're probably going to laugh your ass off at me doing this because it's going to sound so silly. But just imagine, I'm going to paint the picture for you.
This sound creeps me the fuck out.
So imagine you're by yourself. You're traveling in another country. You're in your hotel room. It's nice and quiet. It's dark. Maybe you decided to take a shower. No sound. But you're facing the wall. And all of a sudden, right behind you, a foot away from you, you hear... If you hear that sound, don't turn around. You fucking run. You put your clothes on, dry off. Don't make eye contact with whatever it was. And you get out of the room and you get far, far away because that is the sound of the Kuntilanak or the Pontianak. Yeah, like I said, and we have to have a podcast where, because I've been to Indonesia a couple of times and I love traveling there. I haven't been back in forever, but Indonesians and Malaysians, they know how to do horrors. You can go to Indonesia and take any one of their horror stories or like monster or spirit stories, and you could turn it into like a grade A movie because they are so terrifying. But I digress. What do you think about that story?
That's absolutely terrifying. And I actually remember you told me that story. Remember when you lived up in that apartment not too far from the campus?
Yeah.
Up on that hill? Yeah. And one of our pizza wing drunken escapades watching the Venture Brothers, and for some reason we got into like horror stuff. I guess I asked you about your trips to Indonesia and you told me that story. That sound has stuck with me for years. Dude, and I shit you not, like I would be in the shower and it would just like randomly play in my head. I'm like, oh fuck, like, son of a bitch, I don't want to deal with that. Like, dude, what the hell, man? But let's stick to Asia and move on to, which is one of the creepiest variations of, not essentially a weeping woman, but it falls in line of that category of woman that has been wronged and turned into a vengeful spirit. I know there are plenty of other weeping woman spirits that, you know, we could dedicate entire podcasts to, like the Banshee or the Grey Lady from England and like the White Lady from the Philippines. But I'm so excited to talk about this one because not only did I come across this on our research for today's show, but I was listening to the podcast, a paranormal podcast called Stories with Sapphire with Sapphire Santalo. In their podcast, listener submitted stories. Some were real, some are just creepy. And this one just creeped me the fuck out. And it's about, tell me if you heard about this woman spirit. It's from Japan. It's called the Kuche Sake.
Oh, is that the slit mouth woman one? Oh,
yes, shit. It is.
Yeah, I have heard of that. Terrifying.
Yeah. So you know how she ended up that way. Yeah. So according to Japanese legend, she was mutilated during her lifetime with her mouth being slit from ear to ear. Think of like the Joker scars, but creepier. In some versions of the story was that she was an adulterous wife or a mistress of a samurai during her life. And essentially her being the wife or the mistress of a samurai, this took place, I think, during the Warring States period of Japan. She grew lonely because the samurai was always away from home fighting. So she began having affairs around the town. When the samurai heard of this, he was pissed off. And what he did as a punishment is that he sliced her mouth from ear to ear, completely open, as a punishment. Why? Not only because, one, she was adulterous, and back then they did some really harsh shit to people that were adulterers, but two, she was known to be the most beautiful woman in the town. So it was kind of like one of those things where he's like, okay, are you beautiful now? Yeah. Because women were jealous of her beauty And that was kind of his way of saying, well, you know what? You ain't fucking beautiful now. So that's how the legend goes. And after she dies, she returns as a vengeful spirit.
Okay.
The Japanese word for it is onryo.
Yeah,
I think you ever heard of that word? Yeah. I think JJ, our podcast with him, he might have mentioned that word when talking about Japanese ghosts or spirits. Her spirit, she wears like a surgical mask or a cloth. She carries a sharp instrument with her. So it's either a knife, a machete, a large pair of scissors. In some cases, it's a scythe. Like, how could you fucking hide that? But here's what will happen if you run into the Kuchisake Onna. You'll run into her, this lady with a surgical mask on. In modern stories, she's not dressed in traditional garb. So she's dressed like a regular, modern, everyday woman. And she'll come up to you and ask, am I pretty? And if you say no, she'll kill you. If you say yes, she'll take off the mask and show you her scars. And sometimes, some variations of the story say she has razor sharp teeth for all of her teeth. And then she'll ask in this like really sinister voice, how about now? And if you say no, she'll cut you in half. And if you say yes, she'll slit your mouth so it appears like hers.
There's no winning in that situation. Jesus. I'm trying to think.
No, you're just completely fucked with that.
I'm trying to think about
a
clever way how you would get out of there. There's got to be some really clever way to to catch her off guard. It's like, I don't know. How do you think you're beautiful? You know, turn it back on her. And then like when she responds, she has to do whatever she says to herself. So like that's okay. So that's how you do it. If you're in that situation, you flip the question back to her and be like, before I respond, before I tell you, I want to know, do you think you're pretty? And then if she said she's going to say no, because she knows she doesn't believe she's pretty. So she's going to kill herself and then you're saved. That's how you get out of it, man. There you go. I solved the puzzle.
Oh, you get her. I made a list of short encounters that people have claimed to have had with the Kuchisake Onna. Apparently, they survived. So the first encounter, a young schoolboy encountered Kuchisake Onna. So the story goes that a young schoolboy was walking home when he encountered a woman wearing a surgical mask. The woman stopped him and then said to the boy, "Do you think I'm beautiful? Or do you think I'm pretty?" He didn't respond. He hesitated. So she then removes her mask to reveal her slit mouth and then asks again, "Do you think I'm pretty?" The kid's still petrified. But thankfully, he had a trump card. He managed to escape by distracting her with candies and running away. So carry candy with you.
I wonder what would happen in that situation if you like used a mirror on her. Like when you get her long enough to like down the conversation enough to get her to take her mask off. And then you just like shove a mirror up into her face. Like I feel like that could be one of those like little nuances in a horror story that could like save your life or something like that. I don't know. That's just like, I'm thinking more from the perspective of like how would I write a horror movie that would give enough like way out for the protagonist to kind of escape at least temporarily. But that's what I would do. I would shove a mirror in the face. And that's interesting though. So this story about the kid and he got away, did he immediately go tell his, I wonder if he immediately went to tell his parents or whoever about what happened, because it sounds like he got away unscathed. It also sounds like he never had an encounter with her again. That's an interesting one. That's taken as a true story. Does it say where and when that story came about?
It falls in line where, you know, people either made it up or it's true.
I put more stock into younger children, I think, because having a younger child myself, I think as my kid gets older, like she tends to want to tell the truth more and more, so to speak. When she was younger, she didn't understand, you know, a lot of things. Obviously, there's a sweet spot for kids. Like if you get too old, you get older kids, like adolescents or like, you know, teenagers, they get a little bit too like invested in their emotions. Or what, you know, rightfully so. I mean, we all did growing up. It's a natural part of life. But when you get invested into your emotions too much, you kind of like let your imagination spin wild and you might say or do things for attention because your personality is becoming more complex and your requirements for interactions are becoming greater. So I think kids who are older, like they're more prone to telling white lies or like little fibs or stories like that to get people interested. But when you're younger and you're just getting to that age where you can express yourself, then I think it seems, you know, maybe there's a little bit more credibility, not a lot, but there's a little bit more credibility in a younger child. So I would say that that's, if that story is true, if there really was a kid who said that, I would be suspicious. I would do a little bit of investigating. I would put some more stock into the investigation into that.
Yeah, absolutely. I was really intrigued by this one and I tried to do some digging with it, but unfortunately nothing turned up, which kind of sucks because I was hoping, you know, this was like made it to the news or something like that, because, you know, certain cultures across the world, they take this paranormal and spirits mm-hmm. very seriously. And especially in Asian culture and in Indian culture, they do take this shit very seriously. Like they'll leave salt outside their doors. They'll salt their windows. You name it, any type of superstition to ward off these negative spirits, they'll do it. So that's unfortunate. But I came across a couple of other stories about the Kuchisake Onna, in which people managed to survive, which is, I still find interesting, because according to the legend, whatever answer you have, you're kind of fucked. But it's kind of nice to see some people actually survived. The other story goes that a woman was walking alone late at night coming from work. She encountered a woman wearing a mask. The masked woman then asked the lady if she thought the masked lady was beautiful. The woman felt uneasy with this situation because it's late at night. Like, I don't want someone fucking stopping me in the middle of the night asking me if I think they're beautiful. Like, what the fuck do you want from me? Like, leave me alone. So the woman doesn't directly answer her. And as a result, the masked figure removes their mask, revealing their slit mouth. And then it started to chase her. The lady managed to escape because she found a nearby shop that was open and she was able to go inside and they were able to lock the door. The other story that I have, which I find to be hilarious. Did you have anything to add to the woman's story?
No, feel free to go on to the next one.
Yeah. So this one was titled The Classroom Surprise. So dude, picture this, right? You and I are in class. Let's say we're in that earth science class, right? There's like hundreds of students. There's a professor there. And some random lady just walks in with a surgical mask on, walks straight up to the teacher and asks, "Do you think I'm pretty?" How fucking awkward would that be? Because apparently this is what happened in this story. This is in the middle of the fucking day. This lady is teaching her class. The quote unquote Kuchisake Onna decides, you know, let me roll up in. First of all, how the fuck did she get in? Because you're just walking through the school. Did she kill all the security guards by showing off her face and cutting take them a long in half time or something? I know, right?
Oh my God. So like, I'm just imagining like she's coming into the school and like, she just sees 50 security guards. That's a really secure school, by the way. Let's just imagine like she walks in and she sees 10 people she has to kill. And then she's just like, oh God damn it. And then every single one, she has to like take them out of their space time, draw them into her like little bubble and then like ask them the questions and go down the path and like, and then kill them or whatever, cut their face. And then like every single one just to get to the teacher. I mean, that's how you protect yourself. That's how like you protect yourself.
Right. It's like, at what point does that shit get exhausting? Like, yeah, I'm like some crazy demonic spirit, but come on. That, if they have a conscience, right,
that's true. That's true. That's true. They might not have a conscience. They might just be like a bug where they're just like acting and functioning. And that's actually an interesting idea. We could talk about that in another podcast. Like the psych. We should do that for another pod. The psychology of spirits and demons. And we might be able to even bring that up later today, because like, do they still have any air of humanity in their thought process, or are they just completely, you know, input output at that point? So that's a terrifying concept. But I will say really quickly, I don't know, there's an old show that we used to watch in like the 90s. I don't know if you ever saw it, but it was, or Are You Afraid of the Dark? Do you remember that show?
Yeah. I used to watch that. And I used Tales to watch from Tales Crypt. From the Crypt.
So if you're not familiar with that show, if you're listening, that was an old show from the 90s where like a bunch of kids would sit around a campfire and it was geared towards kids. I think it was on Nickelodeon or Nick or whatever. They would have these kids sit around a campfire and they would tell these stories. But they would only show the kids around the campfire for like a couple minutes to set up the show. They would actually go into each little story. And while the kid was narrating it, they would be acted out by, I think, different kids who would come into the show or whatever. But there was this one episode where they did this story about, I don't know, I don't remember the premise exactly, but it was like some kid like found some gold doubloon from a pirate ship or like a buried treasure or something. And there was a curse affixed to it. And all of the gold had to be in the chest And anybody who took out gold from the chest or whatever riches, like the ghost would come get them in the middle of the night. And but the rule was the ghost could only come on land and come after you while it was dark. After dusk till dawn, they could come get you. But they moved like they didn't have any mode of transportation. They had to walk to you. They wouldn't just like pop up and appear to you. They had to get to you. So one of the theories I remember coming across years ago was, why don't you just take the gold and like move to the middle of Illinois? There's no water. By the time they would get to Illinois, they would have to go back to the ocean by the time the sun came up. So as long as you stayed within that bubble, you could have all that money and then spend that gold as you wanted, as long as you stayed there. So I just like to think, like, from this perspective of the story, with this ghost woman or whatever, the slit mouth woman, you would just need to have like a certain number of security guards around you. So she would have to go through each one of them. And then by the time like she got to so many of them, it would be daytime and she couldn't haunt anymore. So that's all you got to do.
Yeah, just make sure you got enough people to sacrifice in your stead.
Who's faster, me or my friend against the bear? I don't know. We'll find out.
Right. So with the classroom story, so apparently the Kuchisake Onna makes her way to the classroom, walks up to the teacher, and the teacher at this point is like, freak the fuck out. I'm like, there's a stranger in the classroom. Like, what the fuck is going on? So she tries to protect the students. So she like stands in front of the students. The Kuchisake Onna asks her, do you think I'm pretty? And the teacher, being a smart ass, said, you're average. apparently the Kuchisake Onna got pissed off by that response and left the classroom.
Dude, there's your other solution, man. There's always the middle position. There's no right or wrong. How, because she can't act in that situation. I give you a 6 out of 10.
You're all right. For
now, I'm gonna give you my number. Like, I'll give you my number, but there's no promises.
You know, I'll give you my card. I know a plastic surgeon. We could get that slit fixed up for you. Then maybe we could talk.
Yeah, just that's how you solve the problem. Just demoralize her enough to the point where she just doesn't want to deal with your shit anymore. And then she just moves on. Okay, so we found like five solutions already. So we just have to remember that's our book, man. We're going to how to defeat evil spirits by Dean by Chris and Dean.
Chapter 1, demoralize the Kuchisake Onna.
Berate them into feeling like shit.
And if all else fails, make sure you have a bag of candy.
Dude, this is probably the least we've like for a podcast that's trying to be creepy and interesting. Like this has been fun, but we absolutely went off the rails right now. So let's see what we got. Who else? We've got the Banshees of Ireland. That is one I could talk a shit ton on, but I won't because that I don't want to
do.
We have
it.
So many more to go through though. Okay. So
we'll wrap up with the Banshee.
That has always been interesting to me because I think the Banshee, which is an Irish tale, is one that I heard, you know, I had Irish people in my family, part Irish or whatever. I've heard that story quite a lot over the years, and it was one of the first mythological spiritual stories that I ever heard.
Do you guys have Lucky Charms?
I have them downstairs, man. By the way, there's a conspiracy theory about Lucky Charms, which is like, I remember hearing this years ago. The conspiracy theory is something like, it's a lesson in paganism. Think about the Lucky Charms, like the sugary part that'll mess up your mouth and ruin your body and just really mess up your health overall. They're shaped like traditional pagan symbols, stars and moons and horseshoe, or like, you know, whatever symbols that might be associated with paganism.
Right.
But then the healthier part of the cereal, they're shaped like Christian symbols, like the fish. I think there's like a cross in there, like an X kind of. And in the lesson, I think like the conspiracy is the lesson is you got to eat more of the spirit, the good spiritual Christian side in order to get your nutrition. And if you eat too much of the shitty pagan marshmallows, you're going to ruin your health. What did people do? They created, you know, all marshmallow cereal bags.
True. Fuck that.
Oh, my God. Every year that comes out, I just bought like 5 boxes of that because every time it comes out, it's only out for like a few months. And I love Count Chocula. Oh, my God. So good. Back to the Banshee. So growing up, the Banshee was just this really terrifying concept to me because when I saw it, the first time I saw it visually depicted was in this super duper old, it's actually a really good movie. I loved it growing up. It's a Disney movie from like the 70s. Let me look it up real quick. It's called Darby O'Gill and the Little People. Wow, it's a lot older than I remember. It's from 1959. And it's actually got Sean Connery. I forgot Sean Connery was the main character of Michael McBride. But essentially the premise was, you know, it's set in like old school Ireland. It's about this younger guy, this dashing younger guy who is interested in this one woman who's played by Janet Morneau. And there's this other guy who is kind of like a dirtbag. I think he's also interested in the woman, Janet Morneau's character, Katie O'Gill or whatever. So Darby O'Gill is the coolest person though in the movie because he's the father of Janet, and he is like full on Irish, like old school Irish, the most Irish you could possibly imagine. And that was probably more Scottish than anything, but he runs into these actual leprechauns, and the CGI and stuff or whatever the tricks they did back then, it was actually pretty good for the late 50s. But there was this one scene with a banshee, and the banshee was depicted as this, it almost looked like a Dementor kind of looking thing, if I remember correctly. But let me just look at this. Oh, you know what? I'm misremembering. It's actually more terrifying for a kid to see. It's a translucent, like a greenish blue translucent figure that is wrapped up in a long flowing frilly garb. And you can see the face, and it's just like, it's kind of like pixelated, and it just looks like it's missing a nose, and there's not a lot of skin. It's emaciated and the eyes are sunken in. So that is the first visual depiction of a banshee I ever saw. And I think that's why it stuck with me for so long. But the noise that it made is also in the movie, was terrifying. And that's part of the story of the banshee, is like you hear this absolute death curdling wailing. And the difference in Ireland is I don't think there's a backstory to the banshee like the other places where like the woman died tragically or she killed her children, and it's just a spirit that roams the earth that has always been a spirit, but for some reason, I guess it's female. But the omen is if you see it, if you hear it, then you know that there's an impending tragedy about to happen. Then I think if you see it, then you know that it's going to happen to you or your family. So there you go. There's another example of a female figure wailing and screaming and, you know, bringing tragedy and doom or whatever. I'm sure there's some misogynists who can run with that one, but I'm not going to do that because I'm not a misogynist. Sorry to any females listening. We're not trying to attack the female, the female personality, but it's just, that's actually kind of shitty, isn't it? All these stories about poor women just suffering in the worst tragedies and they're still getting fucked over by like,
right.
Anyway. To wrap today's up on the banshee world. Though, the banshee, we could probably even do a deep dive on just that, because I bet there are tons of stories about the banshee. And one in particular that I had the closest encounter I can think of is my grandfather was Irish. We used to go up to his cabin. He had a pretty nice cabin up in the woods, and he lived up there most of the year. And he used to tell me stories about leprechauns and Irish lore and stuff. And he told me about the banshee one time after we watched that movie. And he had some stories from his youth when he was growing up in Ireland. But he told me enough of those stories to where like it freaked me out. And I would, you know, sometimes I would go out into the woods. I was probably like 12 or so. And I would go out to the woods by myself, maybe at dusk sometimes. And there was this one time I heard like a screeching really far in the distance. It was probably a good like half mile away. So it wasn't anywhere near. But I couldn't help but think that, you know, I had just heard the story of the banshee, and I had never heard this sound in the woods before, like the screeching, and it didn't even sound exactly like a person, but it could have been. And there was nobody else around for miles that I knew of. It just really stuck with me as like, it was so weird that I just heard about the banshee in detail. And I just happened to hear like that dusk walking out by myself in the woods, some screeching or wailing in the distance. Not the best story, but just one that I always remembered.
Yeah, that's still creepy, man.
Yeah, I've got some really creepy stories. I'll go into detail. Maybe next time, remind me to tell some stories about. I've had a lot of weird encounters being out in the woods by myself growing up, and a lot of weird noises, and even one really crazy story. I don't know, man. What do you think? Should I tell it now or should I save it? Okay,
let's save it. Let's okay. save it.
Yeah, that's good.
There's a lot of the woods and forests in general. There's like a lot of like creepy stories that people have yes. about that stuff. You know, like the steps, the random stairs in the woods, and like, you know, encountering forest monsters and whatnot. So I think that would be a good addition whenever we do a podcast like that. But back to the weeping women stories. Why do you think we have kind of the same story across all these different cultures over the span of like hundreds, or in the case of like Asia and India and Europe, like over thousands of years. Like, why do you think that is? Because for me, I think it's, how do I put this? I guess it's because back then women were easy to target. Sure. And it was like one of those things where it's to, one, like scare people, but two, actually to keep the young and specifically like women in line. I think that's why these cultures have so many similarities with these stories. Warning young women, saying if you go and do this, or if you act in this manner, you're going to end up as like a vengeful spirit or something like that, or something bad will happen to you. What are your thoughts?
I definitely agree with you. I think that, like we said in the beginning of the podcast, a lot of these stories seem to fall in line with, and I think a lot of stories as well that are kind of creepy, and they're kind of meant to give people second thought about their actions. Because I mean, think about it. Like there were probably a lot of cases, like you said, women were easily targeted and stuff like that. And they were, you know, people would try to manipulate them and stuff because they didn't have a lot of they didn't have as much rights back then. So those stories like really were formulated in cultures where women were subjugated. And probably there were a lot of cases where like men left their women. I mean, I can even think really quickly. I just for the first time in my life watched The Joy Luck Club, and I had heard about it for years. The way the movie is, like, they go through the backstories of all these women who are older, these Asian women, Chinese women who had made it to America, and they're like nearing the end of their lives. There's like also some stories tied to their daughters and dealing with their mothers, but the backstories for the mothers, they would go into detail about where they came from and like old school China, like during the Chiang Kai-shek era or whatever, like right when Mao was coming to power. So like what, like 40s, 50s. And one particular story was about this woman who, like you said, it sounds exactly the same. She had a really handsome husband who was very popular in the village, and he was a really good looking guy, and he was wealthy. And he just, after marrying her, he had a son with her. It just spiraled out of control because he was a womanizer and he was a drinker, and he would pick up random women. And like they showed the evolution of right after they got married up to the point where she was just devastated because he came home with like a mistress. And he like literally told his wife, you know, what's this mess? Clean up this mess. You're wearing shit. Like put on some nice clothes for a change, and just completely berating her. And this guy, this asshole, just takes the mistress in the back room to go bang her. And the woman is like left with a crying baby in the parlor. But they showed the scene where she ended up drowning their son, who was only like 1.5 years old or something like that, little baby in the tub. And then that was like the weight of which, you know, she carried that terrible weight with her to America. And that's, I think really that's the tragedy of these stories, is it's never okay. It's never okay to kill a kid, ever. There's no reason to ever kill a kid, unless it's not a kid, it's a demon kid. And then in which case, you know, you might want to deal with it. But if it's a real human child that is, you know, you don't do that shit. Right. So like, it doesn't matter how bad your life is, you don't take the life of another child. However, I can't imagine, like, you know, a woman who just is full of hope and innocence and wanting to have a really great life for herself and thinking that she, you know, hit the proverbial lottery, being drawn into some great guy's life that she thinks is great. And then having it just being completely dashed to pieces, especially in a place like old school China, where once that happens and the ties are severed and you're an old maid, like, what are you going to do? Like, how are you going to make money? How are you going to keep living the lifestyle that you're experiencing? So that also is the side that we have to consider in these stories, that the weight on the woman is so great that it just, like, everybody has a breaking point and just, she just snaps. So I'm thinking like stories like that were very prevalent in any part of the world, not just China. So it's very possible that stories like the Wailing Woman were fabricated as kind of like a warning to say like, hey, if you do this thing, no matter how bad your life gets, it could still get worse by you traversing the earth for the rest of time, or the rest of whatever amount of time, wailing and screaming or whatever. So I think that there is definitely an aspect to these stories that are manipulated over time to meet the needs of the society or the culture, to, you know, prevent things from happening, like terrible tragedies. But I also think that there are a good amount of stories about these women across cultures to say that, hey, maybe there is something to spirits coming back who have experienced such a terrible tragedy, and their spirits are kind of reverberating through time, and we're experiencing that in these envisions or these depictions of wailing women.
Thanks for tuning into today's episode of The Wandering Road. You can find us on Apple, Google, Spotify, and most podcast platforms. Be sure to subscribe and share. Also, don't forget to give a follow on Instagram at TW Road Podcast and follow my TikTok at TWR Podcast. Take care, and I'll catch you on the next one.